Hello. Coming up, we'll be talking about Project Rescue. How do you get your plans to digitally transform your company back on track during times of disruption? We'll find out with my guest, Bob Green, in episode 137 of the Go Beyond Disruption podcast. From the London office of ARCPA and SEMA, I'm Kyle Hannan, and every week here on the podcast, we share business, tech, and leadership insights from inside the accounting and finance profession that help you stay ahead of the curve, whatever your business and wherever you're based. And we're doing that with my guest, a consultant to the CPA profession, a frequent conference presenter, practice leader at Singer Lewak in Los Angeles. He's an expert in ERP and digital transformation. He is Bob Green. Bob, welcome to the podcast. Where are you joining us from?
Good morning, Kyle. It's good to speak with you. I'm talking in from Los Angeles, California, as you mentioned, and not too far from what unfortunately is not a particularly sunny day in Malibu, California, but live in the hills and really glad to be speaking with you. And I would love to be in London to visit right now.
Yes. Well, at some stage in the future, travel will be possible, but things are changing at the moment. We know they're going to change back in a good way. And I think that's what we're all talking about at the moment. When things were one way and then suddenly they don't go as planned, it's all about disruption. It's all about what we do in the face of it. And that's where I think we start talking about digital transformation. The world has certainly changed. Give us a quick idea of what kind of work you do and how it connects with the accounting and finance profession.
Sure. I run the practice called Singer Lewak Business Informatics at Singer Lewak. We're a regional CPA firm here in the Western United States with about 10 offices and 400 or so people. And our team comprises a lot of different skill sets, very senior advisors really on our team. Product agnostic, and we have a lot of IT assurance capabilities and a lot of the things you'd expect in a CPA firm, but we go well beyond that. A lot of the topics for today are going to include things around capabilities around IT operations, as well as software applications, ERP, CRM, and the like. So what's interesting is when you look at what's going on with the finance profession in particular right now, I mean, the accounting profession has certainly had to adapt to what's happening in the marketplace today with COVID and the other things. Finance profession has been something that's really had to really adapt to disruption. And they're being called upon more and more to deal with getting information in front of people to make better decisions. That is really hard to do if your systems can't keep up. So what we're finding is these days, people's calls tend to be a little bit more about help me either improve what I've got or unwind how bad what I have has been, you know, created and turn it into something more useful for us because we need to model better. Or we might need to create a little bit better dashboarding and metricsing and that sort of thing for the business. So we're seeing a lot of people asking for ways to either be, you know, smarter from information or sometimes even change their processes so they can be more efficient now they're seeing people working remotely.
And when this all happens, your focus moves to clients, people's questions, their situations, their challenges, and their projects cannot in any way all be the same. So when you're working with clients, what are the pivot points that you would normally typically focus on? And are they changing now in these very disrupted times?
You know, they are changing. It's actually allowed us in our little microcosm to appreciate that we have to adapt as well. So I think what we're seeing more and more of is it's along the lines of the theme of my first comment, which is people are recognizing that they need to invest now. Those companies that are fortunate enough to still have their cash flows at a reasonable level, for sure. And really rethink how they're doing things. It's created an opportunity for us to have conversations about, you know, hey, is it really still important to do that? Remember, we used to do that all the time, but why are we doing that now? You know, we've gotten by with doing it a little bit differently. Maybe we should start doing it that way going forward. So we're seeing people thinking through that, and then we're confirming that those types of processes and behaviors become part of what, you know, essentially digital tools and technologies can support going forward. So we're seeing people trying to have technology and other capabilities adapt to the changes in their businesses more so than we used to. We used to be a little bit more methodical, a little bit more straightforward, certainly more strategically plannable without a whole lot of disruption. But with the disruption has come opportunities to improve. And it's been exciting to watch.
that's what's keeping you busy at the moment. But let's go back in time to when you started on your path into your accounting career. What originally brought you into the profession, and how have you seen things in your specialist area change since then?
You know, I look back to my days in high school and how I actually enjoyed a bookkeeping class, which hopefully some of the people listening can remember when that was and when they actually enjoyed those kinds of courses. And I went into public accounting and started at one of the big four firms. At the time, it was a big eight. And I enjoyed it. I was an auditor. I really got a chance to learn a lot about growing companies here in California. I spent a lot of time dealing with rapidly growing companies, in fact, and did some IPO work at a very early age. Really enjoyed it. And ultimately decided that I think I would have a lot more fun getting operationally involved at a company. Moved into a CFO role for one of my clients after being an experienced manager at the big four. And then moved into, after fighting with, you know, vendors about not trying to buy what they were telling me I needed in their mind, but actually realizing that I kind of knew what I needed and what they were trying to force me to buy wasn't really going to solve my problem. I kind of went into this situation and said, you know, I can do this better than they can. And I went straight from, you know, keeping in mind I enjoyed bookkeeping, accounting, and then auditing, and all of a sudden CFO work, to, hey, you know what, I'm going to help people figure out a roadmap for technology going forward. I've been through enough pains on my own as a CFO to figure out I'd like to do it myself, and help other clients. So we did that. And I haven't looked back since. So I now consider myself a financially oriented technologist with a lot of, understanding and frankly, passion for what we do with helping people through change.
Okay. Let's switch focus back to that change and the reason you've joined us here on the Go Beyond Disruption podcast. This episode is called Project Rescue, Getting Digital Transformation Back on Track. That, of course, means we'll be talking a lot about the four pillars of digital transformation. And these are your four pillars. So I'm going to say that I'm simply repeating something that I heard you talk about. And that's the reason that we're doing it and sharing it here. Those four pillars, if I understand this correctly, are people, process, technology, and change. So we'll be looking at what they are, how we can balance them together, and what we can do about it when things start to get a little off balance as we try to roll out a digital transformation project. So with all of these four pillars, Bob, surely one of them's got to be some kind of linchpin. What is the pillar that holds the others together?
It's absolutely the people element. On the website, which I think will be in the show notes, people will be able to take a look at our some of the graphics on our site. You know, everybody around technology projects tends to worry so much about budget and timeline and all the things that are, you know, logistically challenging, and certainly, you know, a number of other issues like skills perhaps might be important. But, you know, these are disruptive things. You know, transformation in itself, when you think about it, is defining, you know, this whole area. It's not just a project anymore. This is actually an evolutionary experience for companies when they're lifting into something more significant and changing their business process. And I would tell you that the people are just absolutely key, because if people don't adopt the change, I mean, everybody listening probably already understands this, but it's so hard to practice. But if people can't adopt what's being done, then why do it? Why spend the money? You look at project failure, which is some of the discussion we're talking about today. Project failure happens because of the people elements. Studies have been done for years. IBM did one a number of years ago. And if you look at out of the 15 or 20 factors why projects fail, you know, the literally the first half of them, and by a long shot, are just leadership, people, skills, all these different things. It's not because of the technology. So I'd focus on the people element. Thanks. It was a great question.
Now, I can't help thinking a little bit about the chicken and the egg. I mean, we hear so much about the impact of the pandemic on digital transformation. I've heard people talk about the situation that sees 5 years of technological change happening in just 5 months. But I have to ask, what came first? Did business force technology to change faster, or was it the other way around? Did technology force business to change?
Well, I'd love the listeners to think about that for a few minutes before they hear my answer, because I think we're going to get a really good split. But my thinking is this: business strategy, from our perspective, has to happen at the very onset of any process that we go through, any client engagement. If it starts with what's the technology answer, we typically don't start there, and we may even walk away. the reality is business strategy has to drive technology and innovation. And what I sense is that, you know, it takes people to make those changes happen, right? So business strategy comes from people. It comes from intelligence. It comes from thinking strategically, you know, about what needs to be done, when and how we create a business plan that actually gets executed through things like digital transformation, among the many things that, that can support a business plan. But I'll tell you something. You look at the technology, though. I mean, technology can change. Take example, here in the States, Target Stores is a very large retailer. They had an application that was pretty much, it was okay to use online or on your phone, to coordinate purchases and things online. You know, they had to transform their app into something that is so incredibly revolutionary today versus what it was even a year ago, before COVID, so that they literally know when you're pulling up at the store because they're using GPS to know when you've left your house and when you get to the store to pick it up and put it in your trunk. You think about the way that that happens. The technology has been around for a long time. It's the business strategy that said this is important and we're willing to make some changes and we're willing to put some investment and some people and some thinking into doing it. So I think that the technology right now is just so far ahead of essentially the business needs that businesses are just going to need to apply people and thinking to take advantage of the things to keep up with the changes that we're going through.
That sounds like technology is making business change. Is that right?
Yes and no. I actually would say business forces technology to go in certain directions, but technology has already gone so far down a path. I think about AI. You know, there's so many things technology can bring that businesses are having a tough time consuming all the value. It's a common thing, Kyle, that happens in our situations with clients where we realize that, you know, particularly when you walk into a failed situation, people just never got a chance to adopt, frankly, the most exciting parts of these technology systems and tools that they purchased. They're still struggling just to get the foundations going. And it's a shame because, you know, being a former CFO, I remember just all the things I wanted the system to get to me so I could make better decisions. Sometimes you never get there because the system's just getting in the way because the people never thought through how to get it in the first place. If you can just get beyond the people challenges and the errors and the issues people bring, the technology is already there. So I think, you know, at this stage, I'd say let's focus on business strategy. Let the technology that's available, which is so phenomenal right now, be deployed as fast as people can consume it.
So it's not a case of technology making business change. It's a case of technology helping business make the changes it needs to.
Indeed. And being an enabler, really. That's what I think of digital transformation anyway. It's really an enabler of process change.
And it's happening much faster at the moment, isn't it? Because I think that's pretty obvious, but is it consistent? And does that mean that they're all looking at things the same way and adapting at pretty much the same rate? Or does their speed of this adaptation vary?
Well, I think if we can focus for a second on the accounting profession, you're going to see just adoption levels of all the technologies available from, you know, from zero to, you know, full. And I think that the firms that have the most resources, I mean, I know we're a decent size, but we're certainly not one of the big four. We've adopted quite a bit of technology. I sense it's very challenging for a lot of my good friends and colleagues that run firms that have, you know, 30 to 60 or less people to adopt all the technologies, not just because of cost, but because of the change it brings to the existing processes that are there. There's always a smarter, better, faster way to do things. And I think the audit profession in particular, I think everybody knows that that's going to be impacted dramatically, both from data mining and all the, you know, computer assisted capabilities, but also just from the standpoint of workflows. There's so many things we can take advantage of. Trying to answer your question also though about the finance profession. I mean, finance with fintech and other things it's another stratosphere. It's probably the one of the most advanced, industries available. But if I'm a financial executive in a company, a CFO, a VP finance, you know, the key to me right now is how do I get, you know, an opportunity to improve my data and my data sets and the cleansing, as I should say, the clean data that I need to, you know, aggregate data to look at things that matter to me. It's a big challenge no matter where you are. I know the ASCPA and CIMA and CGMA folks are always challenging to, find ways to help people get a little bit more, effective and more capable of using FP&A tools to get to a point where they've got better data. So I know we don't mention data as one of the pillars, but it's right there underneath because it supports everything.
And data is always moving faster and faster. There's always more and more and more of it. And I think the temptation at the moment is for people to look at something and think that, well, as long as you move quickly, you're nimble, you're agile, you move fast, that's got to be a good thing. But I've heard you call that out occasionally. I seem to recall that in a previous conversation, you've said that this go, go, go response isn't really for everyone. And I must say, I can understand that. But what happens when things happen at different speeds inside the company? All right, because we always think look outside and then take your cue from that. But I want to take you back to those four pillars of digital transformation we talked about. How easy is it to get the people, the process, the tech, and that speed of change all moving at the same pace? And then I have to ask, is that even possible? Let's start by talking about the people. You said that was the most important. How do people align with digital transformation?
Well, they are the pin, as you mentioned earlier. People align with digital transformation in any number of ways. It's behavior change that needs to occur in almost every situation because we, you know, to be transformative, we're actually, that's the definition. At the same time, I think I was clarifying earlier that the need to be strategic and really think through the why are we doing this? You know, what do we want to accomplish when it's over? That doesn't come from technology, right? It doesn't come from data. It doesn't come from really anything other than people who are ingrained in a business that are trying to take a business from point A to point B in a strategic manner. And they recognize that a digital transformation process is going to help enable some or much of that, or very little of it, depending on the business. And I look at the people piece and think, all right, you know, the element starts at the very onset, absolutely, in the strategic thinking and the planning part. Then it all of a sudden becomes people who have to make sure that the projects actually get executed appropriately. That's a whole different skill than the people who have to figure out why we're doing this. That's a different skill entirely. So, you know, there's a people element there. You know, all the great technology and all the wonderful vendors in the world are never going to get the project done without the people in the company, you know, devoting their time. And at the end of the day, it's the user community at the companies, right, who have to adopt the technology. That's the key. If they can't adopt it, the data will never arise to the bubble of the financial executive in the company to look at it with any sense of comfort. If they can't adopt it, then the business is going to run less efficiently. So I think people are part of every single step of the way. And if they are not locked in and treated appropriately and communicated to effectively about the process, it's going to lead us to the change management discussion we're going to have. At the end of the day, people are the linchpin. And if they don't have the input and the skills to manage these things, these projects go way off the rails.
That's pillar one, people. Let's move to pillars two and three, the process and the technology. What are some best practices for making sure your technology fits in with the rest of your transformation process?
So that's an easy answer. There's an easy answer to that. The reason why most projects have come to our attention that have failed, that we need to jump in and look at, or people who are struggling, it's not because of the technology. You know, technology is typically workable, doable, capable, you know, unless the mistake was made to have a bad software application or some sort of tool set purchase that really isn't the right fit. But at the end of the day, if people didn't have some level of appropriate requirements and think through the things that they want and then match it up against the technologies available, you'll never get there. So technology, which is used to support the processes that need to be implemented and changed, needs to be fit up against very competently a variety of competent vendors that are there to provide satisfactory tools. And, you know, the favorite question we ask when we walk in the door is, did you have requirements built up in the first place? And did you actually compare those very objectively against the vendors who came in? And how did you pick those vendors? We get a lot of blank stares. So I think I'm answering your question in real life scenarios of blank stares is giving you the clue that people really don't spend time thinking about the fit as much as they should.
That takes us, though, to the fourth pillar, the change that you're aiming to deliver. And there've got to be good ways of syncing this with those other three pillars. As I understand it, if I'm getting you, this is really all about balancing the process, isn't it?
It's that and more. Think of the process of digital transformation as this, you know, arrow going from one side of the PowerPoint deck or whatever you're looking at to another as you're showing somebody at the executive level what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, there are a number of different streams that follow that arrow of the and the one that should be and is not frequently part of the entire stream is change management. I know Jeremy Lurie from our team did one of these podcasts with you about change management and how it is used and how important it is through any disruptive process. And so thank you for interviewing him. And he goes into this in greater detail in a different podcast. But I will tell you that we're seeing it every day to the point where our methodologies have had to change in a good way, where clients are recognizing at the very early stage of a process where they're strategically assessing the why are we doing this project, who's going to benefit from it, essentially, what are the risks in this project? What do we know we need to do to mitigate those risks? Those sorts of conversations. Every single one of those conversations deals with some level of outcome that we all want. Those outcomes can't occur without somebody making sure they're keeping an eye on all of the change and the people nuance that goes on. Change management is really supporting the change. Change management behavior includes things like communication planning, okay, strategies of how we're going to tell people what's ahead, what's in it for them, right? How are they going to be able to understand their role in the entire project that's coming down the line? And you need to start that early. And I will tell you that most situations, unless companies are particularly large and have their own departments that do nothing but change adoption and org dev, that doesn't exist. And so what we're seeing is our project sponsors and our clients, they're asking for more and more time with our change consultants on our team because they realize that, wow, they're going to help me communicate. They're going to make sure that people adopt and understand and value and get excited about this project. And they're going to make sure that the uniformity of my management team's attitudes and behaviors about this project are going to really help us get this thing done. So I hope I'm answering your question the right way, but
you are.
That's my thought about change and process. It's all about that.
Definitely. And you mentioned Dr. Lurie. He was interviewed back in February last year. He was talking about adaptive leadership. And I think I remember a quote from Jeremy's interview. He said, you have to make sure you engage any resistors in your change process, and you have to engage with them as if they're there to help. They just don't know how yet. And I think that's something which we'll continue our conversation with shortly, as we'll discuss some more practical steps to turn disruption into opportunity, particularly if the digital transformation goes a little off track. We'll be talking a little more about Project Rescue in a minute. Before we get there, let's talk about where you, the listener, are now. You're with the Go Beyond Disruption podcast. It's brought to you by the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. You can find out more about this podcast and about the rest of our work at gobeyonddisruption.com. If you've just discovered this podcast for the first time, you can subscribe and listen completely free anywhere you access the internet. So look for us wherever you get your podcasts or your music. You can search for Go Beyond Disruption on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and also on India's biggest music and podcast platform called Gaana. And of course, you'll find us all in the top podcast apps too. Just start at gobeyonddisruption.com. Let's go back to our conversation with my guest, Bob Green. We're talking about Project Rescue. How do you get digital transformation back on track? Bob is talking to us about the four pillars of digital transformation, how to get them all working together to make the right things happen in your organization, but most importantly, how to get things back on track should they get a little wobbly at critical times. So, Bob, we're not fortune tellers. We're not soothsayers. We are finance professionals in this profession. It means we look at what we see, we interpret what we see, and do something about it in actionable, practical ways. So that means there are always things to look out for, little signs to notice when things aren't going right, aren't there? I mean, how would we tell in advance that a project, a financial or digital transformation project, is starting to develop a little speed wobble?
I love speed wobble. It makes me think of all kinds of things, but it's a great way to describe it. There's a number of things that are going to give indication to any project that's really gone off the rails. I think the first one that came to my mind when you were describing that is you look around through these digital transformation projects, they tend to be long-term, right? They're not exactly two-week projects. Sometimes they take several years, sometimes many, many months at least. And you start seeing staff fatigue. You know, if I'm the CFO chair, I'm the COO chair, and I'm seeing my people go through this thing, which typically taxes their day-to-day anyway, I start seeing staff fatigue and people starting to burn out on things and maybe not take things as seriously. Even if they don't pick up on it, and the complaints or the fatigue tend to be, you know, showing up as just fatigue with their own day-to-day and not so much the project, it's a good sign that even the project is probably creating a lot of stress and fatigue, and people get sloppy. You know, people start cutting corners and things. I mean, a lot of people have a work ethic that they're not going to let anything drop, and that's fabulous. But, you know, we certainly see the other side of that, which is people are just going to let things go or forget about being accountable to something, and sometimes that's the project. So that's the first one that came to mind. Another one is blame. You start seeing people get pretty frustrated with either, you know, from the company side, they're thinking about this vendor, you know, their project manager is really doing X, Y, and Z, or the analyst really doesn't understand our business and it's really annoying me. And yeah, I could, you know, we all know these complaints we hear all the time. Some of them may be founded. Others might just be an excuse. You know, people are getting a little tired of it. and trying to find fault and not really seeing the forest through the trees. That's another one. So that the blame game starts happening. And you, of course, have vendors who are coming to the sponsors of the project saying, hey, you know what? Your people aren't paying attention, or they're not giving us what they need, and it's going to get ugly. The problem is that, in my view, both the company and the vendor are often equally at fault. And frankly, most of the time, it's the company that's at fault in a project failure. Back to the concept of people and whatnot. That's because people sometimes find a way to not get their work done as needed by the vendor. And the vendor has methodologies much more stringent most of the time than the companies do about these kinds of projects. Those are my general thoughts. I think the concepts of blame and people complaining or just getting just fatigued, those would concern me in a longer term project.
And we know that these days you've got this gig economy. It's a reality where people can't always be on board a project right from the beginning. Quite often you may be brought in as a change management consultant. A job will sometimes drop on your lap and you have to join it halfway through a process. And it's all very well to talk about reverse engineering success if you're there at the beginning. But if you're not, how would you reverse engineer success if you join a project and it looks like things have already gone off the project roadmap?
So you just said something that made me smile. The concept, the speed wobble was a good one. This one's even better. So roadmap. Problem there. That's actually the key indicator, of course. The speed wobble comes from all the other issues I mentioned, but a lot of them most all of that happens because there was no roadmap. And so I'm going to tell you that the first thing that happens is, was there a roadmap in the first place? And the answer is almost always no, if there's something that's gone wrong. Or there just hasn't been some element of managing the change, right? Those are the two key things. And the roadmap, it's interesting. When there isn't one, there's less forensics to do because you can look and say, well, where did you go? And they'll say, well, we never did. There's indicators that happen all the time. We get involved and we'll look at these things and we'll say, look, was there a roadmap? Was there essentially a set of requirements? The answer is often no, or if what was done is really poor and it wasn't reflective of what they really needed. Did we explain to the vendor what the vendor needed? Well, the answer is often no. The vendor needs a good information and understand the business case before they can satisfy a client in the first place. And, shame on the vendor for not asking sometimes, frankly, but shame on the client for not offering a lot more information about why they're doing something and what they expect when it's over. So those are things that are frequent conversations. And these things get particularly forensic oriented, as you can appreciate. We start looking at project scopes and you start realizing that the vendor comes in and says, yeah, for, $1 million, we're going to do these 17 things. And that's, these bullet points are, super short, if anything. And you're kind of wondering who would the client thought that they would spend lots and lots of money to get something done that wasn't particularly well defined and the results weren't particularly laid out and the activities weren't very clear. But it happens way often and much more often than it should. And I put both the companies and the vendors at blame here. That just means nobody was particularly strong at governance. This goes back to the audience we have today, which is going to be really well aware of IT governance, what that means. So those of you listening, if you have those skill sets, please deploy them from the get-go and just make sure that people are looking at, not just making sure roadmaps are there for technology projects, but my goodness, make sure that people are doing things in a prudent business sense of making sure people are going to be able to commit to what they're delivering and by when and for how much and what the results are going
to
be.
You've taken us right back to the people. The people, absolute key. They bring all sorts of experience and skills to a process based on what they know, but generally based on what they've done before. Now, in law, that can work out quite nicely. Precedent is king. But is this always useful if you're trying to innovate and do things in that agile, new style that seems to be so important today? Bob, I have to ask the question about mindset. How do you manage things so you're not stuck trying to fix today's issues with yesterday's mindsets?
So that goes back to such a common theme today. If you don't have in a business a mindset of strategic thinking and purpose and understanding of why something's about to occur in a transformation process, then in itself, that would be kind of yesterday's mindset, right? So if you can get past that and you have some strategic forward-thinking people, you then move into the process of, okay, do we have the people to execute this thing? And if we don't, let's go find them before we fail. Very tough decision for some companies, right? It's hard to deal with that because that may mean replacing people. Hard to augment and quadruple your payroll, right? The other piece of this comes down to, I would argue, finding change agents. Change agents are those people in the organization that once the leadership says, we're going to go down this path, let's go. You've got to have people at the middle management level that are going to continue to keep staff motivated and aware and comfortable and excited, frankly, about what they're about to go do. This all may sound very surreal to some people who've not been through that kind of a process, but it's vital. And the yesterday's mindset point that you're suggesting is one that, you know, is resistant to change typically. Not everybody, but many. And, you know, just because we've always done it this way kind of thinking. And that kind of stuff has to either be removed or counseled out or, you know, dealt with from a change agent that says, hey, it's going to change some things around here for the better. Let's talk about why that matters. And let's try and prove to you that it really will be better. So I don't know. I think the yesterday mindset's a really important way to describe some of those challenges we see in these projects. And I think it starts at the top to reverse them and get innovative. But if you don't start with an innovative leadership and committed leadership to make some changes, the rest of it doesn't matter.
All right. So that deals with yesterday's mindsets. But Bob, if I asked you to look at the horizon and look at the next disruption that may be coming down the pipe, if we say, all right, how are people going to change the way they fix projects in the future? What's one big change that you think lies ahead?
You can never replace good thinking and good people skills in these project rescue experiences, much less even a, you know, successful project, which is hopefully what we do more of. We, as opposed, come in after the fact. But both of these situations, whether you're starting clean or you're starting over, require great thinking. But if you're thinking about what's going to change there and what sort of tools might be impacting how we address that, there's a couple. The capability for people to manage and keep tabs on what's going on some of these transformation projects are maturing very rapidly. Lots more documentation, lots more capability to do project planning that isn't just task and activity and milestone, but really allows us to think through what's going on step by step and how do we measure. Thinking about how to evaluate better at the end of something to make sure we really did the right thing. And if not, let's course correct where we can. Even live and real-time course corrections are going to be important. Tools are going to be available to allow us to do that. We're already seeing the impact of automation in some of the web-based tools we use that allow us to remember and set up triggers to evaluate how, for example, clients are going through their risk management plans during the process of a digital transformation. You don't want to wait to the end and go, yeah, you know, we forgot to take care of that risk and it just came back to bite us and delayed the project 6 months. And I also think that there's the concept of in the future, just the data available to decision makers, both on the project leadership side, as well as the vendor side and client side, you know, and anyone focusing on trying to move something from A to B, the data and the statistics and the information is going to be available in a bigger way than it ever has been. And I also think there's some artificial intelligence play here, but that's probably for another conversation.
You've certainly piqued my curiosity when you talked about these tools and the resources and the different ways that we could be approaching this in the future. So I'm going to ask you to do some signposting for anyone who'd like to find out more about getting digital transformation back on track, or perhaps find out more about your work in particular. Where would you recommend they look online? What are some resources you'd suggest?
Well, thank you. So we actually thought long and hard about what to call our group. SL Business Informatics is very different than just Singer Lewak, the name of our firm. It's funny, if you look online at Google, which some of you running right now, of course, can't do that with earpods in your ears. So just trust me on this one. Business Informatics doesn't have a single definition anywhere. They're so far apart. What we realize is that there's that link between business and users and strategies and that sort of thing with the technology that can help enable the success of those things. And Business Informatics is really kind of that translator in the middle of those. And our website, which is going to be in the notes for this particular podcast, you can find our main firm site, though, is singerlewak.com. Singer is like a lounge singer, and then Lewak spelled L-E-W-A-K. It's important. I think we've got some information there that's helpful, talks a little bit about what we do. But overall, I think for people to think about this area, there is plenty of literature about digital transformation from every major source, consulting firms, CPA firms, that sort of thing. But it's just a great area to dive into. I think the challenge we have is that digital transformation also is such a broadly interpreted thing that there is not a single definition for it either. And as a result, people talking about migrating from an old hardware phone system to something that's cloud-based, people could argue that that's digital transformation. You know, moving from old Outlook to Office 365 is, to some people, digital transformation. So I think it's a matter of how people particularly listening who are thinking about this area as a discipline. There's so much to learn by just really going out there and spending time researching from some of the more reputable sources. And of course, I'd welcome them to take a look at our site as well.
And we'll definitely put links in the show notes. All right. So you mentioned transformation. And if you're talking transformation, I think we can talk fashion. We always ask our guests to imagine we've asked them to design a Go Beyond Disruption t-shirt. On the front, you can print just one thing you'd like every listener to remember from the conversation we've had today. So, Bob, one sentence that would help accounting and finance professionals to go beyond disruption. What's on the front of that t-shirt?
So I'm going to go shorter than a sentence, and I will tell you that the phrase I'm going to use is probably more familiar to people, some people in this listening spectrum than others, just based on when they grew up. But it's very simple. It's the concept of measure twice, cut once. If that's all it said, that would get my message across. I think that the people that have been very kind enough to listen today are hearing a lot about it's important to start with strategic thinking and people energy and thinking about the why and the how and all that. And that's the measuring part. Cutting becomes straightforward. You know, the project can happen if you do the right thing at the beginning. So measure twice, cut once. Great question.
Short, sharp, and really useful advice there from my guest, Bob Green of Singer Leeuwack. To find out more about the work he does and about finance transformation in your profession, just use the info icon on your podcast app. That'll open the show notes and you'll find links to all the resources that we've talked about right there at your fingertips. You can also go to gobeyonddisruption.com and find a link to all of our previous episodes. And of course, if you've found it useful, share it with someone. And you can do that on social. All the links, once again, at gobeyonddisruption.com. From the London office of ARCPA and SEMA, I'm Kyle Hannon. Until next time, keep listening and keep safe. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond Disruption, brought to you by the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. Learn more about today's topic at AICPA-CIMA.com/disruption. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.